prison reform advocates are saying that if the House approves the First Step Act legislation, thousands of current inmates, many more in the future, would get a fairer deal. It is the biggest change to the federal criminal justice system in decades. We're taking a closer look at this compromise bill that passed the Senate Tuesday night, and you're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Mark Osler is a professor of law at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul. He's a former federal prosecutor. His work focuses on clemency, sentencing, and narcotics policy. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here to talk about something that's really, I think, going to be important.
Well, let's break it down. This First Step Act, it's bipartisan support. This was a compromise bill. What are the major components of this legislation?
It's pretty interesting because, like a lot of legislation that's been brewing for a while, it's got different parts that are very distinct from one another. But let's start with what's been referred to as the prison reforms. That what they're talking about primarily is reentry programs in the prison. And it does several things. It sets up a structure to create and actually appropriates money for some of these reentry programs. And what it does, and this is something that's innovative, is that it's going to be evidence-based. That is, it's going to be data-driven based on what works. And it's going to set up a set of programs that prisoners can attend that will enhance their chances of thriving once they're back in society as a returning citizen. One of the things that comes with this is it sets up a group of incentives for prisoners to engage in those programs. And one of those incentives allows them to cut time off the amount of time that they're incarcerated. But it doesn't allow them to shift that time just into freedom, but rather it increases the amount of time they would spend in a halfway house or on home confinement. That's the prison reform.
They call these good time credits or credits that can help them if they have good behavior?
That's correct. Yep. And, we have good time credits already. What this does is it ties it to engaging in these programs that will be shown through the evidence to work in reducing recidivism and increasing employment and other factors that we want to see in people coming back into society.
So how big of a difference could this legislation make? Some people are calling it sweeping, and some people were saying, this is a small step in the right direction, but won't make a huge difference. So why are we seeing such extremes in how we view this legislation?
I think a lot of it has to do with a new mindset. That it's true that this is a limited set of reforms. There are, this is not something that's going to get to a 50% reduction in incarceration or anything like that. However, it does really show a step in the other direction for where we've been going with incarceration at the federal level in a bipartisan way. I mean, one thing, too, is that what I was describing before is just the prison reform. There's also significant sentencing changes as well. That reduces some of the mandatory minimums for narcotics cases, for example, that makes a prior change regarding crack sentencing retroactive, meaning that in 2010, we changed the law that there used to be the famous 100-to-1 ratio between crack and powder.
And you worked on that.
I did. I had a case in the Supreme Court, which we won, that the justices said that judges could categorically reject that. But, of course, some judges continue to categorically accept it. And in 2010, Congress actually changed that ratio to 18-to-1. Can't explain why it was 18-to-1, but that's what they picked. But they didn't make it retroactive. And so that meant that all the people that were serving long crack sentences based on that ratio didn't get a break. And what this legislation does is it allows them to seek their freedom based on that change in law. And that's pretty significant.
The bill would also expand job training for federal prisoners. What does this job training look like?
Well, one thing about job training is it's going to mean different things in different places. That it's going to be developed, again, one of the things that's a focus of this bill is rooting things in data rather than, you know, kind of colloquially coming up with stuff at various locations. And so we're going to have to wait and see what that job training looks like. We know that the job training that exists right now is sometimes linked to jobs that are hard for people to get once on the outside. For example, I've worked with a number of people who they learned how to cut while they were in prison, because that's something that every prison needs is the guy or the woman who can cut hair. But then they get out and they're barred from being employed as a barber or a hairstylist because of the felony conviction. And so one thing that we really need to do as we go forward with job training is either change the laws that create those restrictions or have a focus on the job training towards jobs that are available and not hindered by the fact of the conviction.
Talking with Mark Osler right now. He's a professor of law at University of St. Thomas. You can join in with your questions about the First Step Act, 800-642-1234. Do you see this as a major step for criminal justice reform? What questions do you have about it? How could it impact a federal prison in your community? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Mark, something that's also interesting tied to work training is this idea that you can earn money that would go into an escrow to pay for post-release expenses, because we know that prisoners work while in prison, but they would actually earn money?
Yes, and they already do earn money, but it's a very small amount, less than 50 cents an hour. I'm always struck by the fact that when I get an envelope from a prisoner and, if there's 10 stamps on the envelope, that's 10 or more hours of work in the prison industry that they put in. So what this allows is for them to save up some money that they'll have on hand when they come out. Because that's one thing that is really a problem, is reentry, where you're just stepping out into a society that's fairly hostile to employing you, and you don't have the money to set yourself up.
Would this be enough money to set yourself up, though? I mean, these prisoners would need more support than that.
They do, and that's one thing that is a problem systemically, is that you have some prisoners that come back to a family that supports them, sometimes to a wife or a husband who's been waiting for them, and to a job that sometimes is provided by a family member. And, of course, those people are going to be more successful. This is an incremental change. Will allow some prisoners somewhat of a better chance. But that's why it's called the First Step Act. There's going to have to be more steps required to really fix this system.
Another piece of this act is banning shackling of pregnant women. What is this change about?
That is something that draws, it's based on some specific incidents that occurred regarding pregnant women who were in prison. There's a miscarriage when someone fell, when they were shackled. It's already, as I understand it, against the Bureau of Prisons policy to shackle women during childbirth and in advanced stages of pregnancy. What this does is it legislates that ban, so imposes it on BOP, with certain exceptions for security purposes. The shackling of prisoners who are pregnant from the time the pregnancy is known until postpartum recovery is concluded.
We're getting a better grasp of the First Step Act, putting the legislation in a broader context with Mark Osler as our guide. He's a law professor at University of St. Thomas in Minneapolis. You can join in 800-642-1234. What are your questions or concerns about this legislation? What changes do you think need to be made to America's criminal justice system? Let's talk about it. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation in a minute on the Ideas Network. The Senate passed a major overhaul of the country's federal prison system Tuesday night. We're talking about what the legislation could mean here on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Outgoing House Speaker Paul Ryan supports the First Step Act. It's expected to easily pass the chamber he oversees in the final days of this congressional term and get the president's signature. University of St. Thomas Law Professor Mark Osler stays with us. His work focuses on clemency, sentencing, and narcotics policy. You can join in 800-642-1234. Do you think this legislation will make credible changes to criminal justice? Have you been watching this bill? How do you feel about the First Step Act addressing disparities in sentencing rules for crack and powder cocaine offenses? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. Let's go to Mike now, joining us from Western Wisconsin. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi there. My question for the caller and for you folks that are talking today is just when we look at evidence-based practices and we look at these different programs that are going on in the jail, my question is that who's doing the research for this? And then also, do they have a stake in the game? Is there a financial gain? Are they the programmers themselves? I feel like if you can do research to prove any point, and so I question the validity of some of the programs. Not that they're bad. Is there a checks and balances for the research?
Mike, thanks so much for the call. Mark, what is that critical research out there that helps us inform what this legislation would do?
Yeah, I mean, there is some existing research. The legislation itself sets up a committee that's going to develop a risk assessment system for prisoners, and also there's a committee that's going to develop the evidence-based recidivism reduction programs. On top of that, there's going to be an independent review committee that's established by the legislation to review the development of the risk and needs assessment system. So, you know, one of the concerns we hear about this, and this is something that has been a big item of criticism from the left particularly, is that, you know, what if this is influenced, for example, by private prison systems? And also, what if the data has built into it racial disparities, for example? There's a history of developing data-driven systems, and the data that's gathered incorporates what biases already exist in the system, and then enshrines them because decisions are directed by the evidence that's been gathered. Hopefully, part of this process is going to be aware of that, to avoid that, to weed that out.
Mike, thanks for the call. This legislation does not affect, of course, state and local prisons, just the federal system. And our state and local systems, Mark, make up a great majority of our country's criminal justice framework. Wisconsin has one federal prison. Minnesota has a Sandstone, Waseca, and a prison camp in Duluth. What role do states play in sentencing, rehab, and imprisonment of offenders?
Well, in this area, the states have played a leading role rather than a following role. That much of the reforms here are based on things that happened, for example, in Texas several years ago. And we have the federal legislature looking to those examples. In fact, I think that's one reason that you've seen bipartisan support on these issues, is that it's rooted in the experience of states, including in some cases in the use of data and the development of these systems. And they've seen that it works, and so they're willing to go forward.
Let's go to Vern now, joining us from Boyd. Hi, Vern.
Oh, good morning. Yeah, Professor, I hate to say it, you're a dreamer, because my brother, he spent 2 years at Fox Lake. Now, if they teach you a job, career, they taught him welding. Well, if you got a felony, you're not getting a job. So he just used a different name until he got established. But Walker won't pardon people. That's a block to a job. If you don't have a pardon, nobody's going to hire you. And as for you call them blacks. Well, they don't have any jobs, so they turn to drugs. I wouldn't let a druggie out of prison ever.
Vern, I'm going to stop you right there, but you bring up a number of points. Brother was a welder, changed his name so he could gain footing after being in prison. And then Vern also brings up pardons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and And in terms of getting a job, when people reenter, that is a significant challenge. That in the name of public safety, there's a lot of jobs where people with a felony are barred from those positions, and of course that makes things more challenging. And on top of that, of course, I mean, just aside from the entire categories of employment that people can't pursue, you've got a lot of employers who are unwilling to hire people who have a record. And that's a huge problem. We need to build out the number of employers who are willing to consider people coming out of prison. We're helped by the economy right now in that. With pardons, what that does is eliminates some of the sanctions that people face based on the felony, and they are really important. Unfortunately, Wisconsin and my home state of Minnesota have both done a poor job with pardons. In this state, I just went to the pardon hearings last week, and here they have to go in front of the governor, the attorney general, and the chief justice of the Supreme Court and argue their case. And, of course, we know that in Wisconsin that system has fallen apart. And, frankly, I think that's the second step. As someone who focuses on pardons, on clemency, I'm hoping that the second step after this First Step Act is going to be reform those systems to make them better, to hand-in-hand with the First Step Act, improve the chances that these people have. So I think the employment question is a fair one. I don't think it's right to say that no one can get a job. Certainly, I've worked with a lot of people coming out of prison where they're working and working hard right now. However, it is much more difficult than it should be if what we want as a society is for people who've been convicted to thrive, to have employment, to pay taxes, to support their families.
Let's go to David now in Mequon. Hi, David.
Hi. My uncle was a guard for 34 years in a maximum security prison in Michigan. The number one thing, you can have all these programs. The number one thing that my uncle would always say when these guys would get out, and he'd see them come back a year later into the system again, and he'd always say, if they see I have a record, I'm doomed. And if you can, I think this job programs thing is fine, but you need to go that step where only the police can find out that if you do your time, it should end there. That record, you shouldn't have. My uncle was saying years ago, an inmate could get out, maybe go from Michigan to California, that scarlet letter wouldn't follow him. Well, now that scarlet letter follows him forever till he's 90. And you know, you need to do that first before you send these people out. It's a waste of money because people won't hire them.
David, thanks so much for the call. And Mark, it seems like you have been addressing this, that there is that issue of trying to reestablish your life after prison. Will the First Step Act help take care of that?
Hopefully, the employment programs will. And the increased focus and the money that's provided for reentry, a big part of that's always going to be employment, because we know that if people are going to get on their feet, they in most cases need to be working. And this is both these callers have identified what is a major problem in our society with people reentering, and it's going to have to take several steps to fully take that into account. In Minnesota, we used to have a law that automatically pardoned some young offenders once they aged out at 25, I think. And that allowed for much more employment opportunities for those offenders. And we don't see much like that anymore. The retributive instinct that we've seen come out in the last 30 years has been a problem, that we punish people not only by putting them in prison, but by limiting their opportunities when they come out. Part of what this legislation represents is a change in that attitude. That as a society, we're seeing that when we limit the opportunities of people when they come out, when we continue that sense of retribution beyond the prison term, then we're really hurting everybody, because it's in all of our best interests that these returning citizens really do well once they're out.
The name of this bill is First Step. Is this meant to signal that there is more criminal justice reform to come?
Yes, it is. And I hope that that's true. You see some people saying that this is a once-in-a-generation piece of legislation, and I certainly hope that it's not. I hope that it's a piece of legislation that is like several others in my generation. But that name, the First Step Act, it probably should have been First Step in a Different Direction Act. That what's significant about it is that while we've been walking towards longer sentences, walking towards more retribution against people who have been in prison for decades now, this is a first step going back the other way to correct some of the problems we've created.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure.
Mark Osler is a professor of law at the University of St. Thomas in Minneapolis. He's a former federal prosecutor, and his work focuses on clemency, sentencing, and narcotics policy. Up next, it's the news. Then we talk with Congressman Glenn Grothman here on the Ideas Network.